just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic. Common sense. Compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. Well, I got some good news for you. Ed is finally back. He was out a couple of weeks, and then when we were going to get together, something happened on my end. We were just not able to connect it. Ed has a stringent schedule, so we have to thread the needle every time we set something up, and generally we're able to do that, but we haven't as of late. But thank goodness Ed is back. And Ed, you got to understand, a lot of people worry. You're an older man. When you don't show up from time to time, people sometimes think the worst, but thankfully you're perfectly fine.
Yeah, I can't go into it, but let's just say I was on a secret mission for the president. Leave it at that.
There you go. You also going through some shit too, as far as thinking about where you're going to live, because you're finding Tennessee a little untenable for some of the things you're concerned about. You have thoughts of coming back to Minnesota, which would be interesting. I think a lot of people are in this position with all the things that are happening with abortion and healthcare and all that stuff. They really got to look hard at where they're going to be, because not all places are friendly to people of our generations.
Yeah, and that's still up in the air, whether we leave, whether we stay, or whatever. And a lot of it will depend on what happens this November, quite frankly.
Right.
I need to see some turnaround. I need to see some progress here. For example, locally here, just to throw something local in, we have a bridge that's getting ready to fall down. And now, I happen to know, because I'm an aware person and I pay attention to stuff, that Joe Biden sent, I think it was, I forget how many million dollars it was, to the state of Tennessee and every other state, highway money as part of the whole infrastructure package. And about, I don't know, $30 billion of that, or more, it's not quite that much. I don't have the figures right in front of me, but a lot of it was designated for bridge repair.
Right.
Now, the state of Tennessee is saying, no, you're going to have to handle that one on your own. It's because it's a county road with a county bridge. The problem is, hang on, I'm getting a phone call that I'm going to let go to voicemail. I'll answer him later.
People have to understand that Ed is in demand. He's an older man living in Tennessee, but the phone rings off the hook, and everybody wants a piece of Ed.
there we go. Now, the simple thing about it is, there's money. The state has the money. They should fix this bridge, but because it's, quote, a county bridge, they're saying hands off, and so they're going to have to raise local property tax to pay for this bridge, which is going to be pricey. Now, the thing is, if you're a trucker and you're tooling down the highway with your GPS on, it's going to send you over this bridge. So this bridge is carrying all of this out-of-county traffic.
Right.
There should be some accommodation there. There should be some wiggle room. But I strongly suspect what the state is doing is just sitting on the money, and they're not going to spend it, and that eventually they'll find ways to steal it, which is what they do with anti-poverty money and child care money and all of that comes to us from the federal government. They just sit on it. They don't spend it.
We've talked about this before, not only for highway funding, but for help for the poor or children, and they just sit on it. Is there anything the federal government can do to force them to actually use it and use it in proper places? I mean, it seems ridiculous that the federal government just hands out billions of dollars and then the state can decide what to do with it and then decide to do nothing good with it. There's got to be some fail-safe there to ensure that it's used properly, because it's ridiculous your taxes go up for a bridge when the money's sitting in a fucking account.
Well, this is the thing, you know, that's why I'm, because this is one party rule in Tennessee and has been for a while, unless there's some movement, that's not going to change. I don't know on the, I imagine that they would have to do something on the federal level to, you know, to say use it or lose it. Here's highway money. You've got a year to use it. If you don't use it, you have to pay back. That would make sense. What they always say, like Medicaid, for example, Tennessee refuses to expand Medicaid and accept the federal money. Even all they would have to do is kick in a little bit for administrative costs, and they would have enough money to insure thousands more people than they do now. They refuse to do that, and they always say, well, see, what'll happen is the federal government will make us put all these people on the rolls, and then they'll withdraw the money, which, of course, has never, ever happened.
Right.
But that's their argument. But what it really comes down to is, you know, this money comes in, it sits there, and then people forget about it, and it disappears, or it's repurposed in some way so that the 1%, you know, get the benefit of it, nobody else does. It's that simple. And Tennessee's not the only state that does this. It's pretty endemic for most red states to do this sort of thing. And I don't know why the blue states don't say no more, no more. This has got to stop. You're just taking our money and giving it to rich people in the red states. That's really what's coming down.
Well, I think that's the important issue here is that you're talking about Tennessee because that's where you are, but it's right. No doubt happening in Alabama and Texas and all, like you say, all the other red states. That means there's a lot of people in this country, a high percentage of this population that's not being served properly by their state government, in spite of the fact the federal government is trying to help. That
exactly.
That seems almost criminal. That seems almost theft.
Well, it is. That's exactly what it is. And it goes back to that terrible idea that people keep talking about called states' rights. You know what I say fuck the states. I'm sorry. Most of them are run by idiots or they're run by crooks who are just taking the money, and the people are just so ignorant, they don't know. They just keep voting for these social issue demagogues, and while their pockets are being picked, and any sort of aid that's being sent to them from the federal government is just being intercepted and pocketed. But until there's some real education, until people can get around all of this social bullshit that's part of it. I think if you really look at the red states, a goodly portion of them are former Confederate states, and they just never got over that. That's the problem. They see themselves as conquered people. They see Washington as the enemy, and they only trust their local poobah, whoever that might be. You know, and that's pretty much the way it works in all red states.
Do you see people in these red states or in Tennessee, like yourself? I mean, you're more a woke person than you'll probably find in Tennessee. But do you think people are feeling the pinch of all this and realizing what the problem is, as opposed to just blaming Joe Biden for everything that is taxes?
No, because everything down here is it isn't necessarily religion, but it's like religion. It's all on belief and who you trust. So they trust Fox News, and they trust OAN, and they trust all of the right wing people who are just flat out lying to them. For example, I saw someone was complaining about their car insurance has gone up, and they had posted on a local website Facebook group. Who's got good insurance? Mine's going through the roof. So people start talking about it. And this one person comes on and say, well, the problem is all these millions of illegals they've let into the country who are driving without insurance and causing wrecks and driving up the insurance. And they got that. I know, happen to know they got that straight from Fox News.
Absolutely.
But they, you know, then others chimed in on that. And it's bullshit. It's just insurance companies long ago stopped being insurance companies and started becoming investment houses. They take your money, invest it, and make money, and they are very loath to pay out anything. So they will find a way not to. And they will find a way to raise your insurance every year so they can have more money to invest and make more and give it to them 1%. That's what's wrong with the, you know, it's a matter of regulation. The insurance industry needs to be smacked down big time and broken up and redone and re-regulated, just like every other industry in this country, because they're all owned by corporations or rich people, and they're all non-functioning for what they're supposed to do. That's what's wrong with your insurance.
I've always thought insurance are like highwaymen of old, you know, in the Western days. They just smash and grab. And I always thought they're kind of like religion too, in the sense that insurance is something you have to have. You have to have car insurance. You have to have home insurance. You don't have to have life insurance, but most people do. And instead of saying, am I getting a value for this? They tell you, you got to have it and you want the best. So just trust that what we're charging you is exactly right. And it's the same with religion. You want to get to heaven? You got to tithe. You got to give us this money. There is no basis for the amount you're paying. It's just playing off your fears and your emotions. So in that respect, insurance companies are a lot like religion. You know, before we stepped on here, you were talking about the Supreme Court, and we've got some things going on with the Supreme Court. We both have our disdain for the Supreme Court. Why don't you bring up what we were talking about before we went on?
Well, there's a lot going on there. I can't remember the specific, but I'll start with the first thing that comes into my head, and we can go from there. One of those, of course, is they accepted a case they should never have accepted, and that was on the presidential immunity. Now, this is not the first time the Supreme Court has overstepped their bounds. When Bush-Gore, the contest, there was no reason. There was absolutely no reason for the Supreme Court to be involved in that at all. The laws were in place. The recount was underway. Everything was going according to Hoyle. They step in and stop the recount. And I still don't understand any reasoning they may have had. We know, looking back, that Gore would have won. He would have been president.
Right.
But no, they stepped in. They stepped in, and we had the disastrous George Bush presidency, 8 years of total disaster, including sucking off 40% of my retirement funds and yours, no doubt.
Right.
Now, you know, plus the thousands of people, thousands of lives, both American and Iraqi, and incursions into countries where they didn't need to go, wars they didn't need to fight. All of that, just terrible stuff. And it all goes back to the Supreme Court weighing in and giving George Bush the presidency, right? Now, they bring this ridiculous case, which they decide to take about presidential immunity, which anyone with a brain, you don't need to be a lawyer, you don't need to be a judge, you don't need to be anything other than a person who realizes laws are there for a reason and nobody should be able to violate them with impunity. There was no reason for them to take that case. It doesn't impact future presidents or anything else. The law is a law. If somebody violates it, you arrest them or fine them or whatever it may be. What they're going to do, this is simply to delay this case.
Absolutely.
That's all it's for. They took the case to delay it. They're only considering at the very end of the term. They took every second they possibly could. And what they're going to do is send it back to the district court. That's what they will do. They will not rule on it. They will not give him immunity, because I'll tell you what, if they were to come down and say presidents have total immunity, what's to stop Joe Biden from saying, I'm arresting Donald Trump and putting him in Guantanamo? Too bad.
Exactly. And
by the way,
we're going to send some justices too to Guantanamo.
Yeah.
Because he could do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous, and you have to wonder why they did take it. It seems like the only choice is to allow Donald Trump to delay the case till after the election. But that only benefits Donald Trump if he wins the election. And as we're watching what's going on, that's not going to fucking happen. I've said before, you know, we were all worried about all these trials taking place before the election. I'm not so worried about it anymore. I think this Manhattan district trial is going to be enough to take Donald Trump down to a level where he's just inconsequential with the Republican Party and in the upcoming election. If he wants to push off those other three trials after the election, I'm okay with it, because once they do that and once he loses the election, he has no protection. He is going to get absolutely decimated by these three other trials just because he wanted to wait till after the election. It's going to take more time, and it's going to be step by step. Conviction in the Manhattan district, he's going to be taken down several notches. He will never be weaker than after the elections when he's on trial in these other three trials.
Well, I certainly hope so. All things being equal, that's exactly what I believe will happen. Unfortunately, I also know that there's been a lot of skullduggery behind the scenes going on in state legislatures and in regulatory agencies and in the Supreme Court and in other courts. We just have to wait and see. I mean, last time they really didn't know what they were doing. You know, the resistance to Joe Biden's win was haphazard and thrown together at the last minute and so forth. They've had 4 years to plan now, and we have to see what will happen now. I have to believe that Trump thinks there's something in the works, or he wouldn't be so forthcoming on, you know, everything he says now is aimed at his base and really turns off anybody who isn't of the 30 to 35% that support right. him, right. Swing voters and so forth, or normal Republicans, if there is such a thing left. It boggles my mind that there's still people out there who think the election was stolen, but that seems to be the theme of the Republican Party now. It does worry me that I'm hoping that the FBI and all the other law enforcement agencies and other people are keeping an eye, and they're trying to figure out exactly what's going to go down come, you know, the election.
Well, I understand you mentioning the skullduggery. That's certainly something we have to be worried about with the Republican Party. But I'm not that worried about it, because they've done nothing but fail. Yeah, they may not have been properly set up on January 6th, but they had every fucking advantage. They had nothing working against them, and they still failed. Okay, maybe they screwed up there. But since that time, with all the hearings and the attempts to stain Joe Biden and everything they do is they fail. They fucking fail. They're going to fail in this Manhattan district trial because Donald Trump will be convicted. Now they're going to have to deal with that. Do they still put him up as nominee? I think they probably will, because they need votes for the down ballot. I've said before, I think when we're talking about the Republican Party, or more specifically MAGA, we're dealing with the Apple Dumpling Gang, or the gang that couldn't shoot straight. They can't pull anything off. I've challenged people. I said, since Donald Trump left office, what one thing has the Republicans or Donald Trump done to benefit them? Everything they've done has hurt their chances coming up in November. Yes, they're skullduggery, but these motherfuckers don't know what they're doing, and they consistently fail.
Absolutely. I was really surprised that Speaker Johnson decided to have some sort of backbone or something and get those funding packages for Ukraine and Israel through the House. I'm not sure what's going on there, because I'm sure Donald Trump was against that. I don't understand really how Johnson managed to who reached him, why he reached the conclusions he did that aid should go out. I'm not sure.
Well, maybe he's that one guy, and I've said this all along. If you're a reasonably minded person of average or a little above intelligence, you can take a look at the political system the way it is with the Republican Party, and you can see where it's headed. Donald Trump is not going to survive. He's going to fall off the cliff, and the Republican Party is going to go with him. At some point, people have to say, I can't continue standing next to a guy who's basically committing political and personal suicide. I got to step back and save myself. And I think maybe Mike Johnson is one of those people that have said, yeah, fuck, I see where this is going. I'm going to try to get away from it. Add into the fact that the Democrats probably went in and cut a deal with him. Mike Johnson says he didn't, but the fact of the matter is all the facts point to it. The Democrats would have never voted to save Mike Johnson, yet now they say they will. And what's the only difference? Yeah. The funding for Ukraine. Of course they cut a fucking deal.
Yeah, it's the sausage factory, right?
Yeah.
And as unpleasant as that is, that's the way sausage is made. And, he can deny it till the cock crows or whatever, but right. That's obvious what happened. There was some sort of deal done, and he has personal ambition. So seeing that he would, go down to failure one way or the other, he made the deal. That's what I assume.
We're seeing other Republicans do this too. We're seeing 30 or maybe 40 Republicans retiring from the House of Representatives or the Senate. We're seeing that people are finally realizing very late in the process, but they're realizing this isn't going to end well. And I'm better off if I'm standing on the sidelines as opposed to being caught in the rubble. Because there's going to be a lot of people caught in the rubble when this thing fucking completely crashes.
Well, yeah, for one thing, they don't have any money.
Right.
I mean, it's all going to Trump. And so they stand to gain nothing from the RNC. It has no money to give them.
Right.
So, why would they waste their time and energy running for an office that they're not receiving any sort of help with? So we'll see. I would like to see two or three more go before the election so that we would have the House and Senate for a little while. See what we take that baby out for a spin. Let's see what this government can do.
One of my emailers set up a scenario. It's a rumor going around. Of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to vacate Mike Johnson from the speakership. There's a lot of Republicans that don't agree with that. The Democrats don't agree with it. And as I said, the Democrats said they're going to save him. The rumor going around is that if Marjorie Taylor Greene puts him up for a vote of no confidence, there'll be two or three Republicans in the House that will retire immediately, basically throwing the power over to the Democrats, making Hakeem Jeffries the Speaker of the House. And Johnson doesn't have to worry about being speaker because he just can't be if he's no longer in the majority.
Right. If
this were any other time, I would say, yeah, that's bullshit. But we've already seen people do it. So I think that's a conceivable threat. Now, the question is, will Marjorie Taylor Greene step back from a threat like that? Or will she do what every Republican does, no matter if they see themselves going off the cliff, they will still double down and triple down. And I personally think Marjorie Taylor Greene is stupid enough to still do it.
Oh, yeah. I would bet you $1 million that, which I don't have.
Yeah, so good luck collecting.
But exactly. That's exactly what she'll do because that's all she's got.
Right.
I mean, let's face it. I don't know that she's put in any sort of legislation that benefits her constituents. I don't know that she would know how to do that. All she can do is do these procedural bullshit bills and vacate bills and that kind of thing and take PPP money and not pay it back. That's what Marjorie Taylor Greene's good for.
The interesting thing about Marjorie Taylor Greene is she seems to have a lot of power in the Republican caucus in the House, but who stands with her? MAGA got mad at her. The normal-minded Republicans hate her. Mike Johnson went down to talk to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump basically threw her under the bus. I mean, who's supporting Marjorie Taylor Greene except that big fucking ugly mouth? There is nobody on the Republican side that seemingly likes Marjorie Taylor Greene. So why is it she can still wield some power? That just amazes me.
Yeah, it does me too. And I'm not sure except that you know, maybe they're such weak sisters in the Republican Party now that they're afraid of her, you know, a certain portion of them. But she is so uncontrollable and so erratic that it's really hard to get a handle, you know?
It is.
I mean, as a matter of fact, most of the Republican caucus, the MAGA caucus, or the MAGA group, none of these people are interested in governing. They aren't interested in doing anything, passing any legislation, crafting any legislation or anything that helps their constituents. They don't know how. They don't understand economics. They don't understand anything beyond getting reelected and making some money on the side somehow. You know, most of them go out on the weekends and give speeches to people with more money than the cents. So they make a pretty penny that way. So they just want to stay in power so they can keep making money and make noise and have people look at them so that they, which is what Trump does too. I mean, he has no, these policies he throws out there, they're half cocked. You know, somebody else came up with them or it's bullshit. I noticed he was using that same thing the other day. They were asking him something about abortion, and he said, "I'm going to have a major policy statement in the next 2 weeks or in 14 days." You know, he's been doing that since about 2016. It's always 2 weeks away. It's always 2 weeks away. It's like he's like Annie, you know, in tomorrow, you know. But he's doing that shit again. And why people can't see that, remember that. Yeah. Boggles my mind. But all of these MAGA people are the same way. They're nothing but mouth. They have no intellect behind them. They have nothing except they play on people's prejudices and fears, and they stay, they make noise so people see them and think they are something when they're nothing but clanging bells.
I have a theory about the House of Representatives, and it's kind of out there. But as much as it doesn't make sense, it does make sense. And I'm curious as to what you think. If I'm the Republican Party, based on how the session has gone for the House of Representatives, they're in line in this election to be called out for doing absolutely nothing in the House of Representatives. That's not going to help them in the election. This sounds crazy, but Republicans are crazy. What if they want the Democrats to take the power in the House for the last 6 months, hopefully trying to dilute their complaints of the Republicans doing nothing for the last session? Yeah, but you had it for 6 months. What did you do? And I have a feeling the Democrats could get a few fucking things done if they had the power, but we know the Republicans aren't smart enough to think about that. Let's let the Democrats have it so we can blame them for part of the session, and then they'll fuck up, and the Democrats will do some great shit, and it'll light a fire under Democrats too. I don't know. Do you see that? It sounds crazy thinking, but we're talking about Republicans here.
I've heard crazier. I mean, everything that comes out of their mouth is crazy. Maybe that's it. Maybe they're thinking, let's fold our tents and see what the Democrats can do. We'll have something to run against anyway. You know, maybe, I mean, I don't know if it's too late, but if the Democrats had the House and Senate, could they get that border bill through? Possibly.
Oh, yeah.
Which would be a great thing. And any number of other things that have been proposed and died because of Republican obstruction. You could get a lot done, you know, depending on the Senate. You've still got a couple of turncoats in there.
Yeah.
Democrats in name only, and that sort of thing. But, I do think that maybe we could get some stuff done.
Well, I think the Republican Party has been very successful with the help of Donald Trump to completely destroy the party. The Republican Party bears no resemblance to any Republican Party prior to 2015. I say you can't even call them Republicans because they don't resemble Republicans at all.
No.
And if they have destroyed the Republican Party, what do you think that means after the election? I don't think there's any question the Democrats are going to have a pretty large blue wave in November. But if that happens and there's a blue wave, what do the Republicans do? They can't stay the course because the course has been a fucking utter failure.
Mm-hmm. I guess they would have to try to regroup and find a new leader. I mean, if Trump is defeated again, I don't think they'll let him run again. He had the grievance of the, quote, fake election. I mean, the rigged election and so forth. But everybody knows, which it was not rigged. But I don't know that he could get by with using that again and say, I'm going to run again, you know, because as you pointed out, he's going to be in court most of the time. And my secret suspicion is we know the one case is going to be adjudicated fairly soon.
Yeah.
And I feel fairly certain that he will lose. The others, is he going to want to hang around and go to court, or is he going to? Are we going to have a white Bronco moment with Trump here, trying to get out of town in his jet? You know, well, that's a possibility. I think if he does not win, does he hang around? I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, does he hang around and can he survive? And when I say survive, I don't mean die necessarily, but he is going to be 78 years old. That's one of the things I've always said. I am questioning whether he'll even be the nominee, because after he goes through this trial, gets convicted, more money gets extracted from him. He's got no money to campaign. He's got no money to pay his legal fees, and he's got a lot of legal fees. This is just one out of four cases.
Yeah.
Over the next 5 years, he's going to be just decimated financially if he's going to try to have any kind of defense in the upcoming trials. I always tell people I don't know that he can survive emotionally and physically. And I'm not saying dying. I'm just saying incapacitated some way. If you took all the pressures that he's got hanging over his head and put it on top of us or a 35-year-old guy for that matter, how do you keep moving? He's getting fucking buried.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The guy doesn't sleep. So, and we know from testimony from people from his TV show, The Apprentice, the Celebrity Apprentice in particular, guy lived on Adderall and Coke and whatever.
Right.
So I feel like he's got to crash at some point. He still eats like, you know, a teenager.
Yeah.
I don't see how he's still even alive. You watch him you don't watch him in court, but you see the drawings and you hear that he's falling asleep. Another good sign is that nobody's showing up to cheer
right.
him.
Well, that's exactly the point. You know, you talked about the skullduggery and how he's trying to fire his base up. And everybody says, oh, there could be a civil war. They're going to fight back. At every opportunity they've had to show up, whether it be the indictments and the fingerprinting and the pictures and all that stuff, nobody showed up. Yeah, but wait till the trial. Wait till the trial. It's going to get crazy. And of course, as I always say, five guys in a clown car fucking showed up. Nobody
yeah.
showed up, much to, and Donald Trump was begging for it. He was
yeah.
begging them for it, and they still didn't show up. Now I'm sure people are saying, well, if he gets convicted, you better watch out. I'm telling you right now, nobody's showing up. There's going to be no violence. What there is going to be is people in the streets cheering like motherfuckers, laughing their asses off, and there'll be a lot of joy in this country, but there's not going to be any violence out of the Trumplafucks.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, maybe an isolated incident. I mean, you've got the guy setting himself on fire and that sort of thing, which really boggles my mind. I mean, that leads into something else I want to talk about, though. I mean, last time I saw people setting themselves on fire was about 1968.
Right.
And there was, let's see, what do we have going on there? We had a presidential election coming up. We had unrest about the Vietnam War, particularly on college campuses. And we
Right.
had police and National Guard going in and breaking up, you know, that breaking, driving people out of the buildings that they'd occupied. I mean, it was deja vu all over again with Columbia. I mean, that was a big deal when they went in and cleaned out the students from Columbia back in, I think, 68, 69,
Right,
one of
right.
those. And that does worry me a little bit. I remember those years when we had what I consider now, in retrospect, one of our best presidents ever in Lyndon Johnson, certainly domestic presidents. Of course, he got sidetracked with the Vietnam War, and I don't condone the fact that he got us, that he expanded the war and so forth, but he did have the sense to not run again, and to back off. I was not a, you know, I was a Southerner at the time. I knew nothing about Hubert Humphrey. I just knew he was Johnson's vice president, so I didn't support him. But me and my fellow college students, of course, probably gave Richard Nixon the presidency because we were so upset with Lyndon Johnson's conduct of the war. And of course, we handed everything to Nixon, who was even worse, who expanded the war into Cambodia and had secret bombings and prolonged the conflict, and you name it. And it was one of our worst presidents ever, and was crooked and so forth.
Yeah.
And I really think that may be part of why the Supreme Court's so bad. Practically everybody on the Supreme Court now was part of a Republican administration, is either as a solicitor general or something to do with either Reagan or Bush or Trump.
Right.
And so they're used to working in crooked administrations, and they're used to supporting crooked administrations. So
right.
that does impact their rulings now. They're used to working with crooks and actually supporting crooks. So that makes them crooks as well. And that's the problem with the Supreme Court. That's where they've been taken from. They've been groomed to be exactly what they are. And the fact that Clarence Thomas is ruling on cases about January 6th is unconscionable. The guy's wife was involved. How is that being allowed to happen?
And I would think if they end up voting on the immunity as opposed to sending it back down to the lower court, at best it's going to be 8-1 because there's no way Clarence Thomas is going to vote to not give Donald Trump immunity because it'll affect his wife directly. He would love to see
right.
his wife get away free and clear. I don't think she will. I think, you know, we've heard about the superseding indictments that Jack Smith is supposed to come out with on the Washington D.C. case. We're hearing now rumors that he may not do that till after the election. And as much as I hate to wait for that, I get it. I get it. I understand why he would do that. We want to get through Donald Trump, and we'd want to be free and clear of the election just to take it to these motherfuckers like Jenny Thomas, who are absolutely culpable in the attempted insurrection.
Absolutely. But I do see a parallel in that young voters, let me put it, I don't want to offend anybody because both sides were involved here. I was a college student. I had received a deferment so that I wasn't drafted. I lucked out. I was younger than most people in my class. When I graduated, I was 17 years old. I didn't turn 18 until November. So I had that window between I graduated in May until November where I could not be drafted.
Right.
And before November, I applied to college for the next year and was accepted. So I was given the deferment. So even though I worked a year between high school and college, I wasn't really eligible for the draft. So I was immune from the draft. So I got to college. I was very much against the war and so forth. But I look back now and I realize that all those guys who were being drafted, and people forget that, that a goodly portion of the people who served in Vietnam did not volunteer. They were drafted. They were sent there under penalty of prison,
right,
or having to fly, or having to, you know, leave the country or whatever. So a lot of the, not myself personally, because I wrote letters to friends who were in Vietnam. I had friends there. But a lot of people blamed them. The soldiers, and that was not the case. This was purely government action. The soldiers mostly had no choice. Now, some went willingly, certainly, but and most of those who served there did not come back in a good way.
No,
they saw what they were called upon to do. Many of them had PTSD and still do for years and years and years, because we look at what's going on in Gaza now, and there's very little difference. I mean, you have this military power who's devastating another country, is killing thousands of civilians that they shouldn't be doing. That is no different than what we were doing in Vietnam. We were killing civilians left and right because we didn't know who the enemy was. We couldn't tell the enemy from the guy on the street. So we just killed them all. And that's absolutely what was going on. I don't know if you remember it. You're younger than me, but I remember every evening, right about dinner time, the news would come on and they would give the day's body count. That was it. That was how we knew how we were doing in Vietnam, how many people we killed that day. And the students on the campuses, of course, saw this in a very moral way, morally reprehensible. But often their ire went on the soldiers, not on the policy, which was wrong. But they were right to oppose the policies. They were right to oppose the war, just not the other soldiers, or not the soldiers who were serving in many cases because they absolutely had to. Not because they would have chosen to. Most would not. Most people do not choose to go to a jungle and shoot at other people and be shot at. Most people do not choose that, nor would they. So I see that dichotomy. Now, when you see what the Hamas invaders did to Israelis, you can understand Israeli rage.
Right.
You can understand, because this was a brutal, barbaric attack against women and children, and there's no way that you can justify that attack the way it was done. There's not.
Right.
In the same way, you cannot justify the bombings in the way that the war is being conducted. Now, Joe Biden finds himself in the middle of both of these. He did an address yesterday where he said, yes, protest is sacred, but we can't have violence, or we can't have whatever. Well, that's why you make noise. That's how protests work. And people in tents on a campus is not necessarily violent. And I think it's a fine line. It's a really fine line that the Democrats have to walk here, because this is legitimate protest. And screaming anti-Semitism at everything that has to do with Israel is counterproductive. It isn't all just because the people of Israel happen to be Jewish. It's because they're killing thousands of civilians.
Well, I tell you what, I want to expand on this. This is something I won't talk about on TikTok, because it's a no-win situation. No matter what I say, fucking people are going to hate me. Here on the podcast, it's a much different situation. I'm not going to suggest that I support Israel or I support Hamas, because I would never support a terrorist organization. The problem is there's people in the middle that are innocent and simply collateral damage, and those are the people I truly support. It's not that I don't support Israel. It's their leader is the problem. The Israelis are fine. It's they've got a fucking mini Trump running the country, and as long as that's happening, this is part of the reason why we have these problems. Tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and I want to talk more about this. I want to talk more about the protests, too, because this is an interesting opportunity for us. We see the protests going on in the colleges, and it's very reminiscent, very similar of what was happening in the 60s, as you pointed out. And you were of the generation in the 60s that was dealing with that situation. So maybe you can give us a perspective of what the young kids are thinking today and why they're doing what they're doing. All right, we are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. We're back on the Rational Boomer podcast. We have the good fortune of having Ed back. It's been a while, but now he's back and we can get back into things. And we were talking about something that I don't normally talk about on TikTok because it's always causes me problems. It's the Israeli-Hamas war thing. If I speak badly about what Israel's doing to the people of Gaza, then I'm anti-Semitic, which, of course, I'm not. I'm not mad at Israelis. I'm mad at Benjamin Netanyahu. If I side with the Palestinians, then people tell me, oh, you're supporting a terrorist organization in Hamas, which I am not. It's a no-win situation. It's a problem that's been going on for decades, well before I was fucking born. That's what people have to understand. And now, what I think this is an opportune time for me and for us listening to the podcast and having you here is because we have these protests going on campuses all across the country. And the interesting thing about it is it's very reminiscent. It really resembles what was going on in, like you say, 1968 when people were protesting the wars in all these college campuses. And I got to tell you, in 1968, I was 8 years old. And I had two traumatic experiences that made me cry both times. First of all, my dad, who wasn't the brightest fuck in the world, took me and my brother to go see the movie The Green Beret with John Wayne. And for the time, it was very violent. I still remember a scene of a guy hanging on some barbed wire or something and getting electrocuted or shot up and killed. My brother and I just walked out of there crying about us not wanting to go to the war. And in 1968, we were too young, but within 10 years, we would be in a position to go to war. And we didn't know how long this thing was going to go. We cried, we don't want to go to the war. And then one other time, I'm sitting in my living room watching TV. And it's around that same time, and my mom comes in and I'm crying. She goes, what's wrong with you? And she, I point to the TV set and said, Mom, I don't want to go to college because I'm watching the violence at Madison or wherever it was. So I'm 8 years old. I don't know any different from the Vietnam War. It's always been there. Or the violence on campuses. It's always been there in my short life. So it was traumatizing to me. Now, you're of the era, you're of the generation that were the kids on the campuses protesting. I don't know that you protest, but you're of that generation. You kind of have an idea what was going on then, and it's very similar to what's going on now. What was the mindset of kids there? They were just upset, and they thought they had to do something, and that was the only thing they could do, the protest?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Let me say a couple of things first. The Green Beret was one of the worst movies ever made. It was a commercial for the Vietnam War made by John Wayne. He was instrumental in getting it done. It was pure propaganda. It was an awful, awful movie. In support of the war. And no, they don't let old fat actors go fight in Vietnam. So anyway, that having been said, I'm not a John Wayne fan, and I'm sorry if I offend anyone about that. But no, I didn't care for the guy. I didn't think he could act worth a damn, except in a couple of movies. And his politics, of course, just drove me crazy. That said, okay, yeah, I arrived in 1968. I was a freshman on campus, and in that era, especially, you got to remember, we grew up in the 50s, and anti-communism was in our DNA.
Right.
Books that none dare call it treason, and was one of a book we were all encouraged to read. Very anti-communist, and J. Edgar Hoover had one, and there was a TV series called I Led Three Lives about a guy who was a counter spy and very popular. It was very much anti-communist era, right? That was in our DNA. And although we never in history in school, we never really got into the modern era. For some reason, we'd always end up, if we got to World War One, we'd be lucky. And that was one of those, hey, hey, rah, rah, the Yankees go and beat the Germans in Europe. You know,
right.
No subtlety involved at all, and nothing about politics of World War II or anything like that. We just knew, hey, the Russians were the bad guys, we were the good guys. And then we get to college, where they're teaching actual history, actual sociology, and your mind opens suddenly that you realize you've been lied to for 18 years. And you've been groomed to be a good little citizen and go join the army and give them 2 years of your life. And this is what's expected of you. This is what the mindset you have when you get to college. Now, I went to East Tennessee State University, a small southern state school. It was a little different there in that it tended to be more conservative. I had to take 2 years of ROTC. It was mandatory for every state college to have ROTC. And that meant that I sat in classes. I had to take an ROTC class every quarter. And every Friday I had to put on a uniform and go learn to march. So, you know, I was part of the ROTC. I mean, it was required. And so that was a little different than being at Columbia or Berkeley, let us say. Yeah. But still, we had our awareness expanded, and we realized that this war, you know, our fathers had been attacked. I mean, the country had been attacked by Japan, and Germany was seen as a major threat. And most of the guys that went to World War II, I won't say all, or maybe not even most, but a goodly portion of them volunteered.
Right.
To go fight. Others were drafted and so forth. But in this case, we saw no reason, because we had learned to question government. We saw no justification for this war, and we certainly saw no reason that we should have to go fight it. And along with other 18-year-olds, and wind up maimed and with PTSD and Agent Orange and everything else that was rotten about that war, we saw no reason to support that. So, yeah, we were very much against it, and we were there. We were on campus, so that's where the protests were held.
I think prior to Vietnam, we had wars, and people, like you say, were happy to go to the wars. That was the patriotic thing to do. We have to protect our country. But then when it came to Vietnam, everybody goes, no, that's pretty fucked up. I don't want to go there. And some people put it on the assassination of John F. Kennedy. That's when we lost our innocence, or whatever it was. In that period in the 60s, people started to push back against government, which was a good thing. I think those protests benefited this country, you know, whether it be Vietnam or women's rights or civil rights. As much as they were just hippie kids doing crazy shit, in the end, they actually accomplished some things.
I think they did. And then, for me, the 60s probably began with the assassination of JFK, and they probably ended with the resignation of Richard Nixon.
Right.
But we saw the ending of the war, and we saw the resignation, at least I know a lot of people that I knew, and myself included, saw those as victories. And then, okay, we're back on the right track. We're on an even keel now. Let's get on with our lives. You know, we can't be protesters all our lives. We have to go do this thing that we studied 4 years for. We have to go make a living. We have to get married, have kids, whatever, maintain a job, buy a house. And we left it up to our elected representatives then to take care of it. We paid attention when elections were coming up and so forth. We had our political views and so forth, but we weren't fired up like we were in the 60s because we didn't have that daily provocation. Right. Now, gradually, that, of course, has come back. But this is very similar to me. We see this power we see this imbalance of two, this conflict where we have one party with very little power. We have another power that has military power that we're supporting, which is exactly what was going on in Vietnam. I mean,
right.
we were supporting the Vietnamese government, which wasn't a very good government. Let's put it that way. And then we have these nationalists, Vietnamese, who are being supported by our enemies, Russia and China and so forth. So these are two surrogate powers, right? That's what was going on with Vietnam. It was really America fighting Russia and China, but we were letting the other people fight and die, right? So right. The students recognized this and they protested it. And eventually they won, really. I mean, the war was ended. The draft was ended. The people got 18 years old, got to vote. See, I couldn't vote when I was a freshman in college. I wasn't old enough in that election. So you had to be 21 to vote at that point. So there was a lot involved with it. I want to say one thing that I didn't mention earlier. Anti-Semitism is all wrong, always wrong. Hating somebody because they're Jewish, especially in this country, why you would harass or harm or do anything to a Jewish student or anyone, there is no reason for that. It is always wrong. Now, Israel is a separate country, right?
Right.
And we can support their policies or we cannot support their policies. That doesn't make it pro or anti-Semitic. It makes it pro or anti-Israel on that particular issue.
Right.
Let's get that straight. I can be against, as you say, Netanyahu's policies. That doesn't make me anti-Semitic. It makes me a rational human being because this guy is a criminal. He should be in jail.
Right.
And eventually, I hope he will be. And I really think he's conducting this war to stay out of jail, just like Donald Trump was conducting most of his policies to stay out of jail. So
right.
There's that parallel, too. Now, Hamas is a terrorist organization. It should be wiped out because really the people of Gaza should rise up against Hamas because they're the ones getting them killed. I mean, what they did was horrific. The attack against Israel civilians was horrific.
Mm-hmm.
There's blame on both sides, but the people that are dying right now largely are innocent people.
Well, you know, when we're talking about people in America, you know, you're either for Republicans or for Democrats. It's a dividing line there. You're either or. And like you're pointing out with Israel and Hamas, it's not quite as tight a line because while Hamas is a terrorist organization, some people might look at Netanyahu as a terrorist. But if Donald Trump were our president, they may look at Donald Trump as a terrorist. That doesn't mean we're all terrorists. I have a question about the I get this question all the time, and I honestly don't know how to answer it. Maybe you have a better insight to this. We had the protest in Columbia, at Columbia University now, and we had it in 68, and we had a lot of the similar. What is the disdain by the students toward their college regarding this topic? It seems like, that's where they are. That's where they're going to protest. But why are they so mad at Columbia? Is it because Columbia is pushing back against what they're doing and then they push back? Is there some connection that they see the universities have to this whole issue? I don't get why they have this much trouble with the colleges.
You know, I can give you a couple of anecdotal things that may shine a little light on it. What Columbia was trying to, what the student protest, one of the things they were trying to do was to get the university to divest investments they had in Israel. Basically saying you are funding the killing of people in Gaza because you have investments in Israel. They did the same thing with apartheid in South Africa. They pushed universities, they pushed, corporations not to invest in South African companies and or, what that no money should go to these rogue regimes is what they're saying. And they're calling Netanyahu a rogue regime, which, there's a pretty good chance, there's pretty good evidence that that's the case.
Yeah,
So that's
definitely.
what, and they're not being listened to. The board of directors or whatever, the regents and the administrators and so forth are saying, no, these are lucrative investments. You shut up and go to class. Right. So it's that sort of thing. They're against the war, but they're specifically against the university supporting Israel bombing people in Gaza, for example. So there, that's where that comes in. Now, when I was in college, the major protests that I was involved with, there were two young professors in the sociology department. I don't remember their names now, but they were not rehired. They weren't fired. Their contracts were not renewed for the coming year because of their leftist policy or their leftist teachings and so forth. So the sociology department first, and then students in all the other places rose up in protest for the firing of these two people. And there were protests, there were marches, and so forth. And it all culminated on where a group of students marched on the president's house. It was like a home right in the middle of campus where the president of the university lived. And they came there, and he came out to make an address. Now, I was in the theater department at the time. I was in a rehearsal, and somebody came in and said, there's a proposal to bring everybody over here to this theater where you guys are rehearsing, and the president will take the podium, and people will sit in the chairs, and they'll hash this out, and they'll talk and whatever. So we got busy. I weren't really at the protest. We were trying to, I guess, mob-proof the theater. We were putting lights and locking doors and all of that. And then time passed and nothing happened. So me and another guy decided, we'll go see what's happening. So we worked our way out through the crowd up to right. We managed to get right in front of the crowd where the president came out and he was talking. And then suddenly out of the crowd, something comes flying and hits the president in the forehead.
Wow.
And falls to the ground. Well, I see that it is a paper cup with some ice in it, and not very much of that. But he holds up his hands and says, "We can't have this," and retreats into his the president's house. And then the cops move in and chase everybody away. And the next morning, they're having a ceremony for the ROTC, and they invite everybody to come back, and there's more speeches and so forth. But I think the president used that as a get out of jail free card in a
Yeah.
way. I mean, he wore a bandage the next day on his head, and I know he wasn't injured because I saw it, right? Now, there was no violence that time, and eventually it died down. Now, the only time there really was a big problem was the next year. And my roommate and I had been out. It was a Saturday night. We'd overindulged in adult beverages, and we were pretty much sacked out in our dorm room. We heard this big commotion, and all these guys came running in. There had been a protest of girl dorm hours. At that point, the girls had to be in the dorm at 8 o'clock on a weekday, and they could stay out until 11 on weekends. It was a big deal. They had these protests and so forth, and it devolved into violence. And the cops were running around with clubs, and there was taking pictures of people to get throw them out of college later and so forth. We slept through it. It turned into a giant panty raid, actually.
Wow.
But eventually they did decide that they would have one dorm that would be open 24 hours, and if parents allowed you know, a certain number of girls could live in that dorm if they wanted that, and that was their compromise. And then a couple of years later, that was the dorm policy for all the dorms.
Right.
And then shortly after that, it was co-ed dorms. You
right,
know,
right,
so
right.
It was a tempest in a teapot. We didn't have that much. This was not universal protest all across the country. I mean, there were hot spots like Berkeley, Columbia, and others, Kent State, of course,
right.
Which shows the danger of ever letting untrained troops face off against kids that they don't like anyway.
Right.
I mean, that was just really stupid. You could have seen that one coming a mile away.
Let me ask you this, regarding the violence and the anti-Semitism on campuses right now. We're hearing about that, the violence, the anti-Semitism. And this is all stuff we saw in the 60s, too, that resorted
right.
to violence. You bring up Kent State, where National Guard ended up shooting some kids in Kent State. How much do you think the violence and this anti-Semitism is not so much the kids, but these insurgents or these infiltrators from, you know, white supremacist anti-Semites or Republicans coming in to try to make this a bigger mess than it is?
There's some of that, certainly. The much despised outside agitators. I'll tell you, I never met one. Usually you don't need them. Now, there may be some people during the George Floyd thing in Minneapolis. I know that happened. I know there were
outside
agitators. You know, that happened there for sure. And they were right wing and they were there to cause violence. We know that. You know, I have police friends who told me that.
Yeah.
You know, and we even have video of one of breaking a window to get get things started. But anyway, that's beside the point. That does happen. I think it's just stupidity on the part of the there is no reason that any reasonable person would harass a person just for being Jewish because of what's going on in Israel. They have no control over that. They have no input on that. They're not even, most of them are not even Israeli citizens. There might be a few with dual. It's just stupidity. It's an easy target. It's something that they can, well, you must be Jewish, so I'm going to throw this at you or something because of what's going on in Gaza. But they don't understand the political situation there. Israel and I are the same age. Yeah. I was born in 49. That's when Israel came along. So I can remember one of the earliest things I saw on TV was unrest in Israel, and they were on horseback. And I remember being taken aback that these guys were fighting on horseback in that day and age when, you know, we just fought World War II with tanks and
right.
all of that and airplanes, and these guys were fighting on horseback. I couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 years old, I think, but I do remember that. You know, I remember learning about Israel and Moses and Jesus in Sunday school, and then what I'm seeing on TV is these guys shooting each other, and I'm going, what?
Yeah.
Where's Moses?
Moses can straighten this shit out.
Yeah, part some seas or something, dude. Get going. What's going on here? You know,
I want to spend a little more time talking about this trial that Donald Trump finds himself in, the Manhattan District criminal trial, 34 felony charges. I get people coming to my page, honest to God, and they will say to me, Donald Trump will never be convicted. And I'm just taken aback by that. And I'm not talking about just Republicans. I'm talking about Democrats, too.
Yeah.
I think they have some PTSD of all the shit that Donald Trump's pulled over the years and gotten away with it. And they feel like I'm just mad that it's not going the way I want to as quickly as I want to. So I'm going to pout and just accept the failure of what's going to come. And as I watch this trial, as I watched it coming into it, and as I watch it as it progresses, there is absolutely no way Donald Trump runs the table and is found innocent or not guilty of 34 fucking felony charges. There's just no way. The trial isn't going well. The witnesses are exposing crimes. Hell, David Pecker exposed crimes as the first witness.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the trial? I know you're a little more, you're not as confident as I am about how this is all going to end up, but how are you feeling watching this trial?
I'm having a ball, quite frankly. I think it's going very well. What I see his defense doing is trying to introduce enough doubt so that they can influence one juror,
right,
to say, I can't really vote to convict because they didn't give me enough evidence, or there's this in my mind that makes me think that it was a rogue operation. That's what they keep pushing. It was just Cohen and you know, a couple of other guys trying to extort money, which is stupid, but yeah, they're trying. And, you know, we don't know who's on the jury per se. We don't know how many of them might even be Trump supporters, you know, and hopefully not.
Here's what we know about the jury, though. There's been some reports of this, is that whenever they're walking in and walking past Donald Trump, or they're sitting in the jury box, none of them look or smile at Donald Trump. And my contention is my experience with narcissists, from a distance, they look pretty good. They're strong, they're successful, they're powerful. But when you get close up to a narcissist, whether you be their family or a close friend, narcissists never have close friends for very long, because the cracks come out, the darkness of their soul comes out, and they're not likable people when you get close. They're selfish, they're childish, they're ridiculous, they're foul in every way. And I personally think that with the evidence that's coming out, and these jurors having to sit so close to Donald Trump for 2 months, this isn't working well for them. And I think they've already become annoyed by Donald Trump just by virtue of them not even looking at the fucker. That's kind of strange this early on in the case.
I agree with you 100% on that. The fact that I think is most significant to me is that nobody's showing up, and that includes his family.
Right.
I mean, he had to wish his wife happy birthday from his porn star trial, because she wasn't there. None of his sons have showed up. Nobody else in the family has been there. That's telling. He's not getting any support from anybody.
Well, now, Eric did show up the other day.
Oh, Eric, did he? I missed that.
Eric and Ken Paxton from Texas showed up. I mean, he basically heard that everybody's making fun of him, that nobody's showing up, and he went on the phone and said, Eric, you're coming. Ken, you're coming. Be there. And the funny thing about it, everybody who was sitting in there looking at Eric and these documents coming up and this evidence being exposed, Eric seemed kind of disgusted and surprised by what he was seeing. He was pretty disappointed sitting there. You could just see it on his face. It was absolutely hilarious. But Donald Trump doesn't think beyond the end of his nose, so he just wants the optics. He doesn't care about the after effects or how it impacts anything. It's all about optics. And he thinks he fixed the optics by having Eric show up. And sorry, you got a wife, you got other kids. Ivanka is nowhere. Your favorite kid doesn't even come close. She isn't even talking about this shit. She's staying the fuck out of it, which is a good move.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess Junior's too coked out to know.
But, yeah, no doubt. Maybe he could slip Donnie something, because Donnie is... What about these whole stories of Donnie falling asleep in court and you know, having some bodily functions while he's asleep? I've heard he's passing gas, and I've always questioned, okay, passing gas maybe, but here's a guy that's known for shitting his pants and he's wearing a diaper. I would think just having him passing gas is a little optimistic. I think there may be more to it than that. But honestly, if you put you and I in a courtroom for 8 hours a day, 4 days a week, we might nod off a time or two.
Oh, I guarantee you. I mean, I don't have any sympathy for Donald Trump at all at any time. But I can certainly say that if I had to sit there and listen to this crap, I'd probably nod off, you know, or my mind would go elsewhere. Let's put it that way. And I might rest my eyes while it was wandering, for sure.
The only reason it's different for Donald Trump is because, well, it's Donald Trump, and he spent all these years suggesting that Joe Biden is Sleepy Joe, while also being a cocaine addict, which never made sense to me, because you can't be both. But Donald Trump, because he's this guy that always calls people out, he is ripe for ridicule when he shows the same behavior. And have you seen the pictures of him while he's in the courtroom? This guy, as my mom would say back in the day, looks like he was rode hard and put away wet, because he doesn't look good.
No. Well, like I say, he doesn't sleep. He's got to sleep sometimes. So he's, you know, I mean, looks like he probably has to pay. It's a good thing he has his own plane. Or do you have to pay extra for those bags under his eyes when he when he flies?
Yeah, you know? No shit. Well, you know, the big thing that's going on, too, as well as the trial and all the evidence coming out, it's not going well, is the gag order thing. We know he was hit with, he was convicted of, well, I don't know if convicted is, he's found guilty of violating the gag order 9 times. He was fined $9,000. Now, before the judge came out with his decision, Judge Marchand, there was another hearing set up for 4 more, which at the time of this recording, we haven't heard any determination from the judge as yet. But, I personally think because the prosecution said, we just want to fine him, and people are upset by that. I personally think the prosecution is saying, let's hang as much over his head as we possibly can. This case is going good. Let's not throw a hitch into it. Let's just keep this thing flowing and let's get it done and get the convictions. And I would think, you know, that's the judge's role anyway, to keep everything running smoothly. So that may be why they're reluctant to actually throw him in jail.
It may be. And also, they don't want to give him what he wants. I think he wants nothing more than that, because he thinks when he's seen as a victim that his poll numbers go up. I just heard today that there are a couple of polls out there showing he loses in November. So he's got to be concerned about that. He's concerned about Robert Kennedy stealing more from him than from Biden. So much is going on there that I think he's really hoping that he gets a day or two in jail just so he can be the political prisoner, the Navalny of the United States, and that, all of that. You know, it gives him something to talk about, because let's be completely frank here. The guy is so redundant. I don't know why anybody listens to him at all.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the thing is that he may want to go into jail. I think once he enters jail, wanting to go to jail, he'll realize that he fucked around and found out, because it's not going to be a pleasant experience. But I think with Judge Juan Marchand, he's been careful about putting him in jail. And I think after this last hearing with the 4 violations, he's going to get something. But I think after this point, the fucking around is done. Because Judge Juan Marchand is a serious guy, and he's very concerned about this case running properly. And if Donald Trump continues to run his mouth, he said as much, I have no other choice. Jail is my only option. You know now. So if you do end up doing this and going to jail, it's on you. It's not on me. And I think that's what he's set up here. And I think to think that Donald Trump won't open his mouth when some of these more important witnesses are on and he starts feeling more threatened, it's all reactionary. It's all emotion with Donald Trump. He is going to talk some more, and I think he may spend some time in the pokey, as it were.
I hope so. I don't watch Fox News, so I don't know how they're treating this, you know, for their misled minions or their listeners and so forth. I imagine they're trying to spin it some way or other. But the fact is, the guy was indicted by a grand jury. The jury was seated properly. They could challenge whoever they wanted to. This is a legitimate jury, a legitimate judge who is not crooked, who is not a supporter of Joe Biden necessarily. I mean, who he votes for, I don't care. You have to be able to separate those things, right?
Right, absolutely.
It's just another opportunity once a day for him to repeat the same lies. I know he's backward. Did you check out any of the Time interview, by the way?
I heard bits and pieces of it. I have not read it, but if you have some insights, please enlighten us.
Well, it's all bullshit. I mean, it's just, you know, he was off the cuff. I mean, I think I didn't watch the whole thing. I haven't seen the whole thing. It seemed like the reporter was trying at least to, have some journalistic integrity. But when you're dealing with somebody who just lies all the time, there's no reason to interview them. He put out some stuff that was fairly, this is, you know, when I'm president, I'm going to do these terrible things to people. But, you know, that he'll forget about half of those.
Yeah.
He has no executive function in his mind. It's just whatever pops out at the time. Like I mentioned before, he was doing the old, I'll have a statement on that in 2 weeks, you know, blah, 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 which yeah. means he never will.
Right,
you know,
right.
Or not very many people know that, meaning he didn't know it. You know, his usual standard evasions, that's what I saw. How about Trump Social? Did you invest in that yet?
Did you hear the story about the Trump humper that invested his retirement into it? And he's already lost $500,000, so he sold it at a loss, and now he's crying about now he has to go back to work. I have no empathy for that motherfucker. He deserves what he gets. If you're that stupid, you deserve what you get.
Yeah, and people look at it, and it goes up and down and up and down. You know, it's like GameStop. You know, who yeah. knows who's playing this thing, but it's not a real company. It's you take Trump out of Truth Social and there's nothing else there.
No.
Has very few people, very few advertisers and very few people actually involved with it. They only are there because of what Trump puts up. So it's essentially worthless without Trump. It has no value, and that people are willing to bid this thing up, or I mean, buy this thing, boggles my mind. They got more money than sense. That's all I can say.
Well, even with Trump, it's not worth much. Clearly, it went from 70 no. down to 26. I don't know where it is now. It's kind of bouncing around, but it's worth less than half of what it was when it was at its highest point. Regarding the trial, though, I'm curious as to what you think, because I keep saying something and some people agree with me, some people disagree with me, and those people who disagree with me, of course, are wrong. But as this trial continues, we will have a verdict well before the election, probably as early as early June. Okay. I personally think that a conviction. And there won't be just one conviction. There's going to be double-digit convictions, 10, 15, 20, something like that. I think over and above all the other trials, these convictions are the thing that change everything, are devastating to Donald Trump. And I always say take him down, and people think that it'll put him in jail, and maybe it will put him in jail. But I just think it takes him out of the narrative because it's the ultimate failure, that conviction. Well, what are your thoughts about assuming he gets convicted?
I think it won't shake the base at all, but
no.
It might even click up a point or two there. But everybody else, I mean, the people that are against Trump already, they'll just solidify it. And the undecideds, the swing votes and so forth, I think it's going to have a real impact there because the guy is a felon. And I mean, he will be a felon. And this is, there will be repercussions of that, of course. And then, quite frankly, the idea that a guy who was convicted, indicted by a grand jury, convicted by a jury of his peers, so to speak, And not that he, no, there's nobody else bad enough to be a peer, but he's rightfully convicted. That has to carry some weight. If it doesn't, we're in big trouble. If we are a country where you can be convicted of a crime and not suffer any sort of damage to your reputation, then we're in big, big trouble.
Well, I think that ultimately is a bridge too far, and I think some of the polls suggest that. More importantly, to me, over and above the effects on the public, I know it's going to have a significant effect. I don't think if Donald Trump didn't have this trial, he still can't win in November because of the Roe v. Wade thing. But what do you think multiple convictions do to the emotional and physical state of Trump himself? I think it's going to take a serious toll on him.
I think even one will.
I agree.
I don't think we'll see any more convictions. I don't even think we'll see any more trials before the election. I could be wrong. They might manage to sneak in one more. I don't know what the status is of Georgia.
No, I don't either. But don't you agree, though, that Manhattan District is enough to
it
ruin it
be.
For
I
Donald
mean,
Trump?
It should be, because it's related to campaign skullduggery.
Right.
And if you do that, you would probably do the other.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, I just think you've got a narcissist, and the absolute worst thing you can do to a narcissist that fucks their head up is embarrass them. And by getting convicted by a jury, it's hard to spin that.
Yeah.
So here's Donald Trump with a clear loss. He can't spin it. I think that's where his fucking mind just goes berserk.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, then he's the loser. You know, I mean, that was his big thing to Mark Meadows. We got to spin this. We got to do something. We can't be seen to have lost. He was totally bonkers, the idea that he lost, that he could never admit to that. And he still hasn't conceded, and he never will.
No.
So that would be a clear loss, that he would be defined as a loser. That would have some effect, I would think.
Well, now he's done this all along. When he loses the election, he spins and says it's a fake election. He can spin it. When he gets indicted, well, it's a hoax and a fake thing that these political judges are doing this to him. But once the conviction is in, people always say, well, he may not go to jail right away because he will appeal it. Well, I guess you can say that. He might end up appealing it if he's got the money to do it. But the fact remains is when it's done, even if he is appealing, he is now a convicted felon. There's no two ways about it. He is a convicted felon. There's no way he can change that. There's no way he can spin that. That's who he is. Now, if the appeals change that, which is not likely to happen, it's not going to be for 2 years. So that won't really impact the election. He's a fucking felon. You're voting for a felon. And that is something he's going to have to live with. And that's not something he's not very good at.
Yeah. You know, speaking of appeals, I don't know quite what to say. Something has to happen with the Supreme Court. I mean, this was such a blatant disregard for the rule of law. Even taking this case,
right,
you can absolutely see that it was done for no other reason than to delay any sort of decision. So to help out Donald Trump. I mean, there's no other reason for it.
No.
There just isn't. So there has to be repercussions. And I'm not sure. I mean, John Roberts supposedly set up this commission and supposed to have on ethics and so forth. We find out it's got like three people. This is his great commission. It's a dodge. There's nothing there. And that's what I say. These are all These are all criminal enablers if they're not criminal themselves. Certainly, Thomas is a criminal. He took money, he took goods, he took favors, and delivered decisions or opinions. He did that. We know that. He should be not only thrown out of the Supreme Court, but put in jail for it. Right. His wife should join him in jail for different reasons, but she should also be in prison. There are others. Kavanaugh, deeply in debt, suddenly he's not. How did that happen?
Right.
Amy Coney Barrett in a cult, which she is. Sorry.
Right.
But these were all, they were all in administrations that were corrupt. So they, by extension, are also corrupt and will continue to be. There needs to be a reckoning of the Supreme Court.
Well, and I have trouble understanding how these intelligent people sitting on the Supreme Court don't have any foresight. You can look at Donald Trump. If you're smart, you know he's not going to win. You know the Republicans are going to take a beating. So when we come out the other side and the Democrats are in control in the House and presumably the Senate and certainly the presidency, how they cannot see that there won't be that reckoning. I've said that before. We need to do two things most importantly. Codify Roe v. Wade and straighten out the fucking Supreme Court. If you can't impeach them, you charge them with, I mean, they can, if it's too hard to impeach them, they're still people. They can be charged with crimes from the judicial system or stack the court. They got to know that's coming because people are going to demand it.
Well, that would be my solution right there. I mean, it's fairly easy to do, and there's certainly justification for it. I have my own suspicions that one of the drawbacks with nominating someone for the Supreme Court in previous years was always you didn't want it to look like you were stacking the court. If you were a liberal president, you would probably go for a moderate, not a liberal.
Right.
And the same thing if you were a Republican, you might not go for an extreme right wing person. You might try to find someone who's just a little right of center, maybe, so that you had reasonable people, not ideologues on the court. I think that changed when they started letting the Heritage Foundation vet their choices, because I think they chose people not only that they thought were ideologically pure, if you will, but also that were in some way compromised so they could be controlled.
Right.
That there is something in their background, something, some secret that people don't know that they can use as leverage. I think it was also done to Justice Kennedy to get him to resign.
Right.
And I think it had to do with his son and Deutsche Bank and loans to Trump, because he suddenly decided to retire and there was the opening they needed for another justice. There was some kind of skullduggery that went on there that we don't know about. And I wonder if most of these, Roberts, John Thomas, Kavanaugh, that there's something they have on each and every one of them that could be brought to bear if they don't vote the way they're supposed to.
There was an emailer on the podcast that made a good suggestion. I don't know if it's feasible. I don't know if it's legal, but it sounds like a good idea. And the idea was to pass a bill in the House and the Senate, assuming you have the majority to do that. And that bill would say that any judicial or any judge appointed by a president who has been convicted of a felony should be nullified. And that kind of makes sense. Why would you have a guy who's now a convicted felon be able to put people in the judicial system? It would make sense. Now, I don't know if that's legal or if it's possible or anybody would do it, but I fucking like it.
Yeah, there are a number of things. The presidential pardon should be revisited.
Yeah.
It can only be used in certain circumstances. It can't be used as carte blanche, however the president feels like, to rescue various felons, which it's been used to do almost exclusively with Republican presidents.
Right.
But there are a number of things that need to be addressed. But cleaning up the court is certainly number one, because that's one of the branches, co-equal branches of government. And to have it be totally dysfunctional or totally skewed one direction or the other and with ideology is beyond conscionable. It has to be changed.
Yeah, it definitely has to be changed. Well, Ed, we're coming to the end here. I appreciate the fact that we are able to catch up. I'm going to try to figure out how we're going to do it next week, because I will be in Florida, Key West or Miami until Friday. But I won't be back till Friday in the afternoon, and we usually do it around 11 o'clock or so. We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
We'll figure something out. I appreciate you coming by, Ed. I know everybody's excited to hear you back, and thank you for taking the time to school us youngins. Because you're older than you're almost older than everybody.
That's pretty much it. I'm getting there. There's not quite old enough to be president yet, but I'm getting there.
No, you got to be in your fully in your 80s to fucking do that. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Ed. And for all the folks listening, I want to thank you for taking the time to do that. I hope you have a great day, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.